Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Data One-on-Ones, Part 1. This cast answers these questions. What data do you have to support the use of one-on-ones? What do tests show of one-on-ones? What do the data say about the frequency of one-on-ones? Well, if you want answers to those questions and more, and you do, believe me, keep listening. Here we go.
If you're in Europe and have been waiting for a chance to attend a Manager Tools conference, here it is. We'll be in London, near Heathrow Airport, on February 5th and 6th with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. This event sold out last year, so don't hesitate. Guarantee yourself a seat today by registering for the event at manager-tools.com/training. I hope to see you there.
A lot of people are surprised when they find out that our recommendations are one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, the Trinity, etc. Like, we just didn't, like, make it up. We just didn't, like, wake up one day. You know, what we'd like to do is we'd like to have a management consulting company. And what we're just going to kind of look around and come up with some ideas, maybe write a book, whatever.
Yeah, that's what most people do.
Yeah, but the fact is that this came out of research, testing, and data. And we've talked about it on podcasts before, the fact that the data exists. But today we're going to do something different and talk about the data. And maybe you high C's will finally have enough information to actually do something, change your behavior.
I'll tell you, Mike, I've had half-hour conversations with people at the end of public conferences years ago where they say, you know, I'd really like to know more about the data. And I said, well, sure, let me give you some examples. And I highlighted some of the stuff we're going to mention today and some stuff from feedback. And they said, no, I'd really need to look at the raw data, you know, how many of this and how many of that and so on. I said, really? I mean, you're talking about looking at data, not knowing what the company is or what level the manager is and how many one-on-ones he did, what the percentage increase was and what the math was. And the guy says, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to look at it. I said, okay, let me ask a different question. You say you love to look at it. And actually, I don't blame you if you're into that kind of stuff. But you're telling me that you won't change your behavior without looking at that data? And he said, yeah, I really need data. I said, what other parts of your life do you apply that level of scrutiny to? Because no offense, you're here at a training that, you know, you're admitting I'm not as good at this as I could be. That said, it doesn't matter. We've had the data for a long time. There are some reasons why we didn't publish it, because we don't own all of the data. A lot of it is a function of work for hire in my previous firm and some legal issues. But we basically have eliminated the problems with it. And I just, you know, the other day I was having a conversation about data and I kind of felt bad that I hadn't gone through the process of putting it all together, digging it all out, abstracting enough so that we could put it into a podcast while protecting the companies that we were doing the work for. And I said, you know, it's been, what, 14 years since we first tried a podcast in your house on your laptop? And so here we go.
So just curiosity, I'm just curious how many managers were involved in this testing. It was
funny.
A couple hundred?
Yeah, we did a couple hundred. We have studied 175,000 managers in companies of every size, shape, form, industry, so on every, I say, inhabited continent of the world.
Okay.
And we're talking, at a high level, which won't satisfy a lot of the people who want the data, long-term studies, a year, 18 months, with hundreds, and in some cases, thousands of managers, and them being checked weekly to ensure they're doing the stuff, and then measuring before and after, and having control groups. You can't really do a double blind. It doesn't work that way. And there are some rules about management studies that you can't continue to ask managers to engage in a behavior that you know is not going to improve something. So there are some special rules, and we don't need to get in all the details. But look, at a high level, you brought it up at the beginning. The problem with most management guidance is it's someone's opinion. And probably if they're smart, they had an opinion and then they've tried it. They've implemented it in a few places and it worked. They didn't have a before and after. But basically what we're talking about is a large set of anecdotes that most management opinion is based on. Now, look, guys, I'm okay with lots of management opinion. I disagree with it. But I understand that that's the standard for management opinion today. I've been saying for years, if you've been listening, data is coming. Tracking of managers is coming. It's going to become more scientific. It's going to become more behavioral, just like everything else in the world has, because it's gotten easier to track. It's gotten easier to be clear about. I have always thought, does anybody else think it's funny that in the high fashion world, all of these really high fashion houses in Paris, and then when they do shows in Milan and Rome and London and, of course, New York, that they all have the same themes every year? Now, I don't know how that happens. I don't know anything about fashion. But isn't it funny that management is kind of the same way, that a lot of books come out at the same time touting some sort of recommendation that resonates really nicely with the latest fad you read about? Maybe it's an HBR to get it started or whatever. Things like, oh, we've got to treat millennials differently, or, oh, we have to start talking about engagement or servant leadership. And, you know, again, that reminds me that the plural of anecdote is not data. I could spend 30 minutes talking about engagement. And I don't mean to be an iconoclast. We just have a different approach, and one that makes me feel better about the guidance we recommend.
Well, I think we're going to get into later, so I don't want to steal your thunder. But I think the interesting part about that is you can look at all these other quote-unquote fads that are out there and look at them and go, yeah, I can see where that would have a positive impact on the organization. And you may be right. The question isn't whether it will have a positive impact, because there's probably thousands of behaviors, literally thousands of behaviors that you could do would have a positive impact on their organization. The question is, and if you had to focus on a few, and folks, we have to focus on a few, we can't do them all, which ones would you focus on?
Yeah. Well, look, there's something else here as well. There's something called the placebo effect, but in business world, in the management world, it's generally called the Hawthorne effect. And I think there's a Wikipedia page for the Hawthorne effect. But if you're managing people and you really don't know what you're doing, guys, don't take offense. The whole point of Manager Tools was neither Mike nor I knew what we were doing, and we don't want you to go through it. And you're struggling, and your company hasn't trained you, and they haven't taught you the first two rules of management or results and retention. 99% of managers don't know that. If you endeavor, and you're reasonably smart, which you are, to become a better manager, you're going to get some benefit, much like the Hawthorne effect, where they turned the lights up and productivity went up, and they kept doing it and productivity kept going up. And then they turned the lights down and productivity went up again. And it wasn't the lights. It was the perception of the directs that the people in the factory, actually women in the factory, felt that management was paying attention to them and what they needed. So a lot of the times where we get some improvement on something, managers are like, wow, that worked. Well, yeah, almost anything will work at some level. And if you're going to make a difference, the key to that is having the discipline to stick with that thing rather than engaging in the flavor of the month and every 3 months or 6 months changing what you're trying to improve. It would be far better to change one thing and to inculcate that really deeply into your management being and behaviors for the next year so that it becomes second nature, rather than saying, I'm going to add a new thing every 3 to 6 months. Okay. So our stuff is different. I try not to pat ourselves on the back for saying that, but look, all of our Trinity guidance is backed with extensive research, testing with real-world managers in real-world organizations. And part of the reason we're going to do this cast, and there'll be ones for feedback, coaching, and delegation, is to help you persuade others to experiment with Manager Tools guidance. In this case, in this cast, we're going to talk about the data on one-on-ones. Now, I'm going to start with some basic stuff about Trinity derivation, because I don't want people to get confused, particularly if you're new. And then we're going to get into one-on-ones and what one-on-ones do in terms of results and retention. The first part, when we talk about Trinity derivation data, none of this is our data. This is management science. Nobody talks about it, but it's out there. And we didn't invent the Trinity. We call it the Trinity, but we didn't invent the behaviors. It's only when we get into one-on-ones that we're talking about data that we developed in the field. But if I only talk about one-on-one data, pretty quickly people will go, well, okay, but where does this come from? And why does it come out this way? Well, that's because of the Trinity derivation. So let's walk through that at a high level. So long before Manager Tools, management science had pretty much concluded that there were 15 manager behaviors, that correlated positively with results and retention at some non-trivial level. And for the record, guys, management science had also pretty much concluded at that point that the measure of a manager was his or her ability to get results while retaining their directs. Sustainable results in an organization are the accepted managerial benchmarks for success. Now, the management science, some studies were done and so on, and data was pooled and some metadata was looked at. The 15 behaviors that I'm talking about corresponded to 97% of a manager's ability to move the needle on results and retention. Now, in case you're wondering, for the other 3%, there are thousands of other behaviors managers can engage in that may have some effect on results and retention. Okay? Who knows? There could be almost anything you could do. But 15 of them, right? It makes no sense to talk about the other hundreds because these 15 represent the top 97%, your vast majority of stuff to get things done. Now, if you had been told that when you started out as a manager, Mike and I weren't, almost nobody I know is, wouldn't you say, well, let's only talk about the 15? I mean, certainly I want to know things that I should avoid, but let's at least focus on the 15.
That makes sense, right? I
mean, the moment we did that, you would immediately then look at the data and go, wait, I don't need to know about the 15. I only need to know about the top four. And here's why. Thanks to Pareto and the 80-20 rule, there are four of those 15 behaviors that account for 75% of a manager's ability to achieve results and retention. Only four of the myriad behaviors a typical manager can engage in deliver greater than single-digit contribution improvements in results and retention. Just four. Now, we're not saying that's proof, and there's always exceptions for individuals versus the means and medians for a group. I'm sure we're going to get some data, some emails which say, well, I didn't do any of your things, and I notably improved results and retention. Of course. The way data and studies work, if I test whether or not X has an outcome, that doesn't mean, therefore, that any effort at Y will not have an outcome. It's very difficult to test for every behavior at the same time. You can only sample certain behaviors. But think of it this way, from a behavioral perspective, based on the data, would you rather focus on four behaviors that are likely to make up 75% of your leverage? Or would you rather work on thousands of others at the other end of the spectrum? Or would you rather work on the 11, 15 minus 4 is 11. Would you rather work on those other 11 behaviors that could potentially drive 22% of your impact? Four of the 15 behaviors account for 75% of a manager's ability to achieve results from retention. You know, maybe there are 10 or 50 behaviors you could engage in that might in total make as much of a 3% difference in your report card. But why would you do that? Why wouldn't you go to the top one and work on that one? Now, I will tell you one of the reasons why you wouldn't go to the top one, because you don't like it, because it doesn't resonate with you. But that reminds me of the old story of the guy who loses his keys and he's walking, he's looking around underneath the street lamp and somebody stops him, a police officer stops and says, hey, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for my keys. He says, oh, did you lose them around here? He says, no, but the light's better here, right? The science of this suggests that it doesn't matter what you like. And there's a healthy portion of y'all listening right now. And your first thought is, I don't like one-on-ones. For the record, guys, I've said it many times in my career, I don't like one-on-ones. I don't. I do them because they work. If I was left to my own devices, I wouldn't be a great manager. And I actually don't think of myself as an exceptionally great manager. I'm a very good manager because I engage in the right behaviors. But if you told me when I was 22, look, you got to get to know your people, I'd be like, no, I don't think so. Now, of course, if you told me that and it was just your opinion, I would say, well, I disagree. Because what we bring to the table is our own opinion and somebody else's opinion is probably not all that great. Unless, of course, this person has a long track record of management success. Unfortunately, it's really hard in today's world to determine whether somebody has a long track record of management success because there aren't metrics for managers. And typically when people talk about who got promoted and who did well and so on, they don't say he built or she built great relationships with people. They talk all the time about performance. They say, you know, he had this great home run on a big project, or, you know, he's got the right degree, or he went to the right school, or, you know, he was in the job where a lot of people get promoted. All the discussion about managerial success and potentially, you know, responsibility growth, which is often how managerial success is characterized, the discussions about why people succeed is wildly different from the underlying behaviors that people engage in. Categorizing and cataloging management behaviors isn't easy, and you don't notice the day-to-day things. In fact, the bias would be to ignore the day-to-day behaviors because you think most managers do mostly the same thing, and there are some things that stand out, like, wow, look, he's a salesman and he had a 25% increase in his territory. I bet he's going to get promoted. Well, that may be true, but it may in fact be the underlying behaviors that got him or her the 25%. Okay. All that said, you're a listener. You're smart. By the way, Mike, I don't know if I told you recently, I think I was in Dallas, and somebody said to me, you know, every once in a while, Mark, you say things and you seem to be suggesting that, you know, it takes a little bit of smarts to be good as a manager. I said, yeah, it takes only a little bit. He says, I got to tell you something, Mark. I think you're missing the point. I think your audience is by definition smart. And I said, I probably guess so. He says, no, you're missing the point. He says, in order to listen to you guys, you're going to have to be smart because you guys talk in detail about behaviors and you make connections, logical connections, that it's important for people to follow for them to justify changing their behavior. Somebody who isn't into management and isn't going to pay attention and doesn't have the right level of intelligence to understand how all this stuff connects together is not going to listen to you.
Yeah. That's what MT stands, Mensa tools.
Yes, exactly. Look, we know our listeners are smart. The average manager does not have to be smart. And that's only because how companies promote people sometimes doesn't necessarily favor smart.
Right. And this is the great thing. Nobody in our audience right now is demanding proof of that statement because they've experienced it directly.
That's good. Yeah. Look, you're busy as a manager. You don't have time to work on all 150 or 80 or even 11 behaviors that don't get you much leverage. You're going to focus on the four that get you 75% of the way there. Now, you might go about it randomly until you learn that the top four most impactful behaviors a manager can engage in to achieve results and retention are not equally effective, because they're not. The Trinity are not equally weighted. And it might take you an entire career. And you would probably still be swayed in terms of the key things that made a difference in your career by large events, because that's what people would mention when they gave you a raise or a promotion or special assignments or whatever. All that said, let's get down to the details. The single most effective behavior a manager can engage in to improve results from retention is getting to know your people. For the record, guys, I hate that. But you know what? Second rule of the army. If it's stupid, but it works, it's not stupid. You are not paid to be happy. You are not paid to have a natural affinity for parts of your job. You are paid to be effective. And so the first question we ought to ask is, what behaviors, what ideas, what principles and disciplines align with effectiveness? Not what do I want to do, but as Drucker would say, what does the organization need me to do? The data show that getting to know your people represents 40% of the value that the top four behaviors contribute to results and retention. Nearly half of the value of the top four is contained in the first one. So to determine its overall value, right, we have to multiply 75%. We're talking about four behaviors that represent 75% of 97%. We're going to round up from 97% to 100. Okay. So to determine the overall value of getting to know your people, you multiply 75% by 40%, and you see that roughly getting to know your people represents 30% of your ability to move the needle on results and retention. Any time you spend on results from retention versus any other behavior, all things being equal, in the long run, spread out over many, many samples, not that you're not an exception and you won't have greater or lesser effect, that of course always happens, will be the single biggest thing that will increase results and retention. One behavior, one, and by the way, I'll get to how we measure it in a second. One behavior out of potentially thousands that you can engage in on a day-to-day basis amounts to roughly a third of your ability to get what you're paid to get. And look, that's really powerful. That makes it, you know, if I were young, if I were doing this for the first time, I'd say, well, that makes it easy. I'm going to overinvest in that. If nothing else, why wouldn't you overinvest in the thing that singly creates the greatest chance for success?
Yeah, it's like having a company that sells products and you have 1,000 products and there's one of them that's responsible for 30% of your revenue. So, like, oh, no, we're not going to focus. Let's not even think about that this year. Let's think about number 1,000.
You're joking about that, but companies do that all the time. They say, well, we've got 1,000 products. We need all of them to be at 30%. There's a statistical joke about that. We need all of them to be at 30%. It's a joke, folks. Of course, what they want is all of them to be selling at that amount, and then they'd all be one-tenth of 1%. And by the way, let me just mention how we measure getting to know your people. To be clear, we don't measure getting to know your people by whether or not you do one-on-ones. That's a behavior that hopefully leads to an outcome. The way we measure how well you know your people is not what you say about how well you know your people. All you have to do is listen to our cast, the Direct Relationship Acid Test. You can go to the map of the universe and you can find that on our website. We don't measure it based on that. We measure it based on how well your directs say you know them. We also can measure trust, which is the most widely accepted proxy for this, but actually trust has enough differential perception in it that I don't prefer it as much. I prefer the measure of how well do you think your boss knows you.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue on this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.